Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Author's Quill. I hope everyone is having a wonderful, marvelous day. We've had nothing but nasty rain for 2 days, but it is beautiful outside right now, probably in the low 80s. I think I'm in L.A. It's so cool outside right now. Yep. We have John Goodman with us. He comes and joins with us from time to time. We are talking to a guest who won the big one. We're going to get into that in a minute. That's Jack Nash. But we'll bring him on in just a second. We also have Egil Chernik. Now, in between us, it sounds a little kinky, I know, but it's not. It's legit. She has an art show in between the two author shows. So it's very interesting. She's full of a lot of good information. Today, she was getting into the business parts. And she's going to do a lot of the business part on helping, you know, anybody who wants to know how to get out into the field and make money. Because it's one thing to be a talented artist or author. It's another thing to know how to put it to practical, you know, let me put that in my bank account. And I know I've been that one way myself. Well, Jack, welcome to the show, man. How you doing? So wait, before we even go anywhere, so you did big. Okay. How do you feel, man? I mean, is it still there or what? I mean, tell me, come on.
No, feeling pretty good. Yeah, it's still surreal. Still feeling really great to come back from Writers of the Future. I have my grand prize and my first prize trophy, and just it's been fun to finally dive into the stories and just, yeah, surreal, humbled, all the good emotions.
So anybody who was picking me as young, I'd be here, see, look at this. Don't y'all wish y'all had one of these? And then it's a special one, too. This is 40 anniversary. This is a special one. It's well, I'm always excited for when I see a winner. I mean, always excited for all the winners to start off with, because really, most of the winners I find are pretty interesting characters and a lot of fun to talk to as yourself. I mean, all the
stories. Is that what's on the shelf behind you there, Jack? The two trophies?
Yep, that's over my shoulder. Two trophies on my dresser.
Yeah, I see that.
That's the big ones, guys. So Jimmy knows. So they don't know who the big winner is. I mean, none of the winners know who the big winner is going to be until the night of the event at the gala event. I mean, I don't know for sure. They don't ever tell me anything. They're scared. I'm gonna tell all of y'all.
I'm just a surprise.
And by the way, this is 5 events. I've never picked one right yet. I always tell, don't ask me to pick your thing, because you're probably not gonna win if I do. I don't know what it is. It's the stories I like. I mean, I like really most all the stories. But I never picked the right one. And the same thing with the illustrators. I get close every once in a while, I guess, you know, because maybe the one next to the one that won or something. So you're back in the real world. I know we were talking before we got here about, you know, going back to work and making money. I know that sucks because, you know, I have to do it myself. I mean, I do a lot of radio stuff. I do a lot of lectures, do a lot of traveling. Then all of a sudden, boom, I'm back at home doing construction. I'm like, okay, what just happened? So I mean, how does it feel? I mean, you're there, you settled in. So can you balance both? I mean, let me rephrase that question. So I know you have to work because you have to have a career. So can you balance your career to where you have the time to really, really sit down and write so you can start, you know, moving from one career to the other career, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's been there's definitely the week after coming home, there was a lot of adjusting, you know, coming back from the win, all the things we learned at the workshop, all the people we met. It was definitely hard to get focused on a real world job. But I'm a bit lucky. The position I'm in now, I do a lot of communications work. So it's helping various clients figure out how to talk to people. So there is a lot of writing in my job. Mostly, you know, it's nonfiction stuff. It might not be the most interesting, but it still helps me. Even when I'm doing my normal day-to-day job, I'm able to think about, okay, how is this a good sentence? How is this a way to communicate something? You know, always in the back of my mind, there's the story part of me that's saying, would this work for a story at some point, some political thriller, what have you?
We need them.
Yep. And then it's just a matter of finding time throughout the day to write. Actually, one of my favorite authors, his name is Stephen Graham Jones. He writes mostly horror. I think his most famous book is called The Only Good Indians. Absolutely wonderful. But he says that he even writes it when he's filling up his car at the gas station. He's got a little notebook and he's writing down ideas. I think I've had to incorporate that a little bit. You have to find those few little free moments of the day just to jot down a thought, a line of something, and then, you know, always got to be squeezing in time to write. And hopefully one day I'll be able to make it a full-time thing.
Well, yeah, hopefully you can. I mean, I try to do a little bit because I get so many people harass me about writing something. We're not going to mention no names.
Yeah, speaking of which, Joe.
See? Instant harassment, man. Instant.
Instant. So, now, I'm just curious, Jack, so on your story, because it takes place in Africa, and it comes across as somebody very, very knowledgeable in African mysticism, not just as well as like the various levels of you've got the poor, the extra poor, and the super poor, and then you've got your which is what your community is. You've got, and then they rely on spirits to be able to offset things. So how much of that's based upon your own experience there versus research? Because it just, I would think like somebody, because I love Nnedi Okorafor as an author. Mm-hmm. And that's something I can really see her writing, because she's Nigerian descent and has spent quite some time in Nigeria. So I could see something like that coming from her. But then I read it and then I met you and I went, how do you do that?
that's a great question. So a little bit of my background. So I served a religious mission for my church during my undergraduate years. And I lived in Cameroon for about 18 months, the Republic of Congo for about 6 months. I loved it so much, I changed my career to focus on Africa. I returned to a few African countries to do undergraduate research. My first job was all focused on Africa, so I've been to the continent. Quite a few countries, several times. So my story was actually quite personal. It was, you know, obviously it's a fantasy. The spirits are made up. You know, that was my imagination. But the other things, a lot of the people in it, a lot of the circumstances, those were all things that I've observed, that I've talked to people with about, that come from my own experiences. It was just drawing from a lot of the things I'd seen there. You know, I'm obviously not an African. That's not my life experience. But you know, a big chunk of my life has been in Africa and focused on Africa and appreciating Africa, learning about their stories, their history, their culture. So I was able to draw on that a little bit to create some of this world. But I'm glad that you felt that came through. That it came through as
really
authentic.
Did. It's well, just interesting that. Too, because. Elrond Hubbard spent quite some time in Africa too, and he actually proposed a constitution which freed the Africans from the British rule. And his visa was not renewed when he did that, but he spent a lot of time down there, and he saw the future of civilization in Africa. He said, "Look, this is, I mean, it's such a religious, they're so spiritual in Africa," and he just totally loved the African people and just amazing writings he did about them and trying to help free them and deal with illiteracy and those problems. Or he spent quite some time down there doing that. But it's just interesting how, you know, what you're saying, what you just said, and all the time you spent there with your own brought about by religion first, but then getting to know them, just wanting to be able to just further get to know them, because it's a whole different thing. Obviously there are issues there, but my own experience too is it's a very spiritual people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Adam, you ought to you should do a book on the first African American that's going to take us to Mars, Elon Musk. See, that's cheating, I know, but still, it's a loophole, because it's interesting, because I was listening to him talk about living in Africa, not South Africa, because when he talks about South Africa, it's not. Anyway, we won't get into that. But when he talks about Africa itself, he's got a whole different, you can hear it in his voice. Like he enjoyed it running around as a kid. He must have got to travel a lot through Africa. And he really did like it. But he always said the reason he came to the United States is because he needed somewhere that he could bloom, you know, somewhere where the money was, basically, is what he was saying. So I've always wanted somebody to write a book because, you know, he said he's going to go to Mars. No matter what, he's going to Mars. And I was just thinking how unique it was that an African was going to take us to Mars. And through America, no less. It's just, I could never write a book like that because I wouldn't even know how to start. But still, someone like you has talent. You might, of course, and Elon might come, you know, come visit you or something. But I don't want to get you in no trouble with Elon.
Yeah, he's but like, God, Joe will sponsor you, Jack. He'll yes, give you, he'll offer you in advance for that because he really wants this a lot. So he'll
yes, because I got this feeling. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, the James Bond Moonraker thing, but every time he tells me about going to Mars and starting Elonville, I just get this feeling that, you know, ooh, it might not be good for the rest of us, man. I don't know what it is. It's just one of those feelings to see. You need to write a book about it and alert the rest of the planet, man. I mean, Jesus. But it would be interesting. You got to say it'd be interesting.
Well, then there's a lot of just real world issues that I think that's one thing that's so great about science fiction in particular, is that it can take real world issues and extrapolate on those and kind of turn a mirror back and examine what's actually going on in the world. Because, you know, when you talk about tech and Africa, a majority of the rare earth minerals that we need to finance the future, it comes from Africa, the Congo Basin in particular. You know, and one hand, it's great for the continent because they hold this potential for wealth. On the other hand, it's causing a lot of problems because there's a lot of competition for it. It's not well regulated. There's a lot of the average ordinary citizens are getting caught up in the environmental degradation, the corruption that can cause from these multinational corporations trying to come in for these minerals that are really going to change the future and that we all need them. So there's a lot of interesting things that you can explore in that, you know, recognizing that the future is interesting, but also the people here in reality, in the present day, they also have their stories and they're being impacted by, you know, the West's vision for the future, or China's vision for the future, you know, insert whatever superpower have you.
Whatever the hell that's going to be. So you can write a book about that. It's not, I guess that's probably guesswork at this point, but hey, you know, Sean Hazard likes to write those kind of books about weird World War III and stuff. Every time I read one of his books, I'm like, dude, what is it? You want us to die? What's going on here, man? I mean, there's got to be a way out of this, you know, that we can all like. And hey, since they say we came out of Africa, maybe the solution should come out of Africa.
I firmly believe that. You know, at the genetic level, we're all African. You know, it's the continent where it all started. And, you know, in my, you know, my previous job in particular, meeting a lot of young Africans, there are a lot of young entrepreneurs who are just really going to change the world, in Africa in particular. We've been talking about Elon Musk, but, you know, Twitter had started setting up headquarters in Ghana, I believe, because they were looking to the continent for the future. Unfortunately, that ended under Twitter's new leadership. But I think the drive is still there. There's still a lot of young Africans who are very passionate, very intelligent, very forward-thinking. So I definitely can see the solutions of the future coming out of that continent.
It'd be nice to see him actually get some credit for a change. I said, Frankie, oh, no, I mean, you can write books about anything. I mean, that's not the point. But writing something that might actually change. I was watching TV yesterday. I can't remember this movie star. And he's ranting and raving. They asked him how, if he was a devil, how would he take over the world? So I got to listen to him. Everything he says has come to pass on our planet. All 100 and whatever things he said has all come to pass on our planet. I'm like, okay, is this guy psychic or just insane? It was very interesting to listen to, because when you listen to him, he talks about things that are obviously going on right now that 60 years ago he would have had no idea. When he talks about social media, really? Nobody knew what social media was 60 years ago. It's just crazy to listen to the guy. And he's just a nobody movie star. I mean, he was somebody back in the day, but today he's a nobody. And it was just crazy to listen to him. But his native country was West Kenya. He was a British citizen, but it was where he came. It's where he was born, was in West Kenya. And he was talking about how people see he didn't say the universe. I can't quite remember the word, but it basically means the environment we live in, how they see it differently than we do. And of course, everybody sees a different American who wrote that. No, of course they do, because we're nuts over here. Well, get me started on that. If you want to hear me talk about that, come see us on Friday night on News and the Flip Side.
There we go. So with that, we'll use that as a bridge here over back to Jack now. And because this is, we're also in the middle of a release of his book, Rising Future Volume 40, which is just, it's only been out for a week or two. And exactly. We want to make that thing a bestseller. And it's going to be hitting the other countries starting next month. So we got to keep momentum going on this thing and talking about it. So what I mean, I loved your story. It was obviously a great story because it won. So we drilled how to do the. What's the description of your story?
In the workshop, we worked on the elevator pitch. Mine is a young boy in an African village tries to negotiate with spirits to get out of a life and death situation. But on the deeper level, it's about community. It's about family. And it's about the duties of tradition and how we navigate those in our daily lives.
Yeah. It was, it's an awesome story. And it's, I would not have guessed that it was written by the likes of you. But anyway, it was. And you won, and congratulations.
Thank you. One thing
I'm curious about, this is all these questions I didn't ask on the podcast, which just aired 2 hours ago. But you were there and you were one of the winners. So you went through the workshop, and then you also did the free online workshop, which has Scott Card, Tim Powers, and Dave Wolverton teaching. How do they compare? Because we've got like between 9,000 people now on either having done or on the online course. How does that compare to what you got at the workshop?
That's a great question. There is slight advantages to both. I'll start with the online workshop because that's what I did first. The online workshop is great because you can pause, you can go back, you can re-listen. And so it's really great to kind of hear, say that again, rewind, go back. But what was really great about the in-person workshop is that you actually have the instructors in front of you. And then you can raise your hand and say, I have this specific question, either in a story I've worked on or something that I'm trying to work on. This is X, Y, and Z. What is your thought? And then you can actually talk about something you're actually working on. So that was the real advantage of actually having that face-to-face interaction with the winner's workshop, is that you could make it a little bit more personalized. But definitely want to give a shout out for the online workshop. It was a great learning tool. There's really nothing like it out there, especially for something that's just free. I've taken workshops where you have to pay for them, and they've been good. The Writers of the Future one is better, and you don't have to pay anything. It's amazing, especially for writers looking to get started out. It's the number one place to get started. Take a story, take the course. Five stars.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. The 10 times that I've been through it now, we're not going to talk about it. Really and truly, though, it's helped me. That and hanging out, which have helped me to understand things that I had not a clue about. We'll leave that at that. But it is a great thing listening to these old timers talk. I mean, they have just tons of wisdom.
Yeah.
All kind of interesting stuff. Plus, they liked being questioned, which is a little strange, but still.
They definitely enjoy that. Now, you have Tim Powers and Orson Scott Card on the online writing workshop, the free one, and you had them in front of you at the workshop. How was that?
That was also amazing. Orson Scott Card, he's also a Brigham Young University grad. Growing up in Utah, he's kind of like, a famous Utah author. But he was kind of, always seemed very distant because he was so famous. But it was quite incredible to actually sit across a chair from him and listen to him talk. But it was really good to see his perspective. He was, the online workshop, it's a little bit more polished, isn't quite the word I'm looking for, but it's it's been smoothed over. It's a video recording, but having the raw Orson Scott Card in conversation, asking questions, was really fun. And then Tim Powers was also great. He's very humorous in person. Every third line was a joke. Very witty, dry humor. I really, really enjoyed listening to him. But then, in the winner's workshop, we had other instructors too. We had Nnedi Okorafor, which we mentioned. She's a big favorite of mine, so it was really great to listen to her talk to us about her process writing, where she finds inspiration, future stuff that she's working on currently. It was just a great opportunity.
Yeah, and that reminds me too is, and I'm putting it on my Facebook page, I'm pinning it to the top, Orson Scott Card, we have a live Q&A, a two-hour Q&A with him tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, with him doing a two-hour live Q&A. open to any writers to be able to, but you have to pre-register. But it's tonight. He loves doing these things. That's one of his favorite things. So every quarter he does a live Q&A. So that's going to be tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern time, where you can ask Orson Scott Card a question.
Awesome. Yeah, I've registered. I'm planning on being there.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, he's always fun to talk to. I'll say that. That I'm not even Arthur. He's fun to talk to. he's a wealth of information. I asked him all kind of questions he told me about. So, you know, when I'm there, a lot of times I'm pushing these authors for the same questions that y'all are asking them, because I'm just nosy an hour later or 5 hours later if they're going to give me a different answer than they gave y'all, which of course they don't. But still, it's always fun to talk to them and say, and, you know, like I said, it's not just in the class. You've got full access to them. Lunchtime, dinner time, bar con time. They really are accessible. I was surprised the first time I went that they was accessible as they were. Because, I mean, some of these guys are pretty damn famous, let's be honest. And they have some really big books to their name. And I'm just surprised that most of them are kind of down home and let me show you how to do this correctly. I mean, did you feel that way? I mean, you're because I'm just a bystander. I'm outside watching in. I'm not, you know, you're the one that's actually one and sitting there going, all right, is this right? Is this what I need? Is this going to help me get to the next phase?
Yeah, no, no. All the judges, we called it a lobby con this year. You know, meeting in the hotel lobby around the bar, just chatting.
Getting that word.
I know it's. I mean, it was fun for me. It's the first time, so lobby con feels a bit more normal. I know the past people in the past struggled, but no, it was great. You know, all the judges were, not even just like come up and ask me a question. That's fine. You know, they were eager to talk to us. They were curious about what we were working on, how we got here. You know, they wanted to share with us the wisdom that they've acquired over their careers. And it was just really great to get all these different perspectives as well. You know, I sat down with Dean Wesley Smith for a few hours and just talked to him about how he became a writer. You know, he's very passionate about the self-publishing and the hybrid publishing, you know, not quite the traditional publishing route. It was really great to hear his perspective on that and how he's gotten so successful in that area, and just talk to him about how writing fiction and has changed over the last few years. So it's just a great experience.
And they all seem to have opinions.
Boy, they do that.
Yes, they do.
It's funny when they go up there and instructor A says, you know, you need to self-promote. You need to get out there and just really like crack the whip and introduce yourself to people. And then instructor B says, nah, not so much. You just need to, your job is to write the books. The other guy's job is to do that. Yet one instructor A says, traditional publishing is the way to go. And then you're talking about Dean Wesley Smith. No, traditional public is on the way out. The new thing is indie or self-publishing. That's the way of the future. That's where you're going to make it. And just, there isn't a way. And so you can pick and choose what really works for you. And even as you grow your career, you know, you can have pigeonholed some data you got from a judge that doesn't apply now, but all of a sudden, that's what he was talking about 10 years down the road, which some of our winners have said, it didn't really hit me until so much time in the future later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of varied opinion, but it was all useful. You know, as someone who's totally new to this, is like, you're all right. I'm gonna have to do it all. So, see what the future brings.
And they're always fun to listen to when they don't agree. Mm-hmm. It's well, that's a bad choice of words. It's not that they don't agree, because they'll tell you when they're up there talking, especially if there's two of them and they're going back and forth. They'll tell you that we've both been successful with this, so you can try either way. Mm-hmm. And in the self-publishing thing, some of them like, some of them don't. I'm not exactly sure why, but I remember Todd had those all of those banners behind him, and Dean was giving him the whole entire time. Dean was giving him trouble. Not just, he would not stop giving him trouble about it. He said, you know, Todd, you don't really need those to sell your books. Todd's like, let me explain to y'all why you need these when you're at Dragon Con or wherever. They went back. It was hilarious. I mean, it was a lot of information came out of that, but it was hilarious to listen to.
Yeah, they're definitely funny. That. Are you going to be going to any of the conventions? Emily's got like 10 people set to come to FanX and very
I'm trying to figure out my schedule coming up this fall. The schedule for the job is a little unsure at the moment. Hopefully I can make it to FanX. I'm going to try to aim for Dragon Con in Atlanta. We also have out in Virginia, it's a slightly smaller, I think it's called a Capacon, but it's a more local one. So definitely going to try to make it to some of these conventions.
Yeah, because we get, because the owner of Tampa Comic Con and Salt Lake City FanX, Dan Farr, he was our keynote speaker last year. He was so amazed at this. So he gives basically an extra booth space that we can bring winners to. And we give them complimentary passes so that they can go there and we set up signings for the winners and judges as well. And then Dragon Con, Pat Henry, he's the one that was here this year presenting the Dragon Award. He was a keynote speaker half a dozen years ago. And he was just like, oh my God, I've known him forever since he first started this Dragon Con back in the late 80s. I've been going there since then. And I remember selling him when he had all of his comic stores selling Battlefield Earth and Mission Earth way back when. And so then they give us extra space and they give us a whole booth at Dragon Con for the art show. So we have probably half a dozen of our artists there with exhibits in the art show. And we're able to promote to get people to enter the contest. And this year, one of our illustrator winners from last year is doing the t-shirt for the Dragon Con Blood Drive, which is the biggest science fiction blood drive in the US. And so she's amazing. So it's just because it's been so successful and they've observed it, they give us a lot of these extra perks to help support themselves, writers and illustrators of the feature. So that's, so if you come to any of those shows, you'll get a free pro badge. We'll be able to arrange for you. And we're trying to get a few people coming down to San Diego Comic-Con as well, where we got, we can get free badges there for them too.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely going to try to take advantage of that.
This
is it's a new world for me. So I'm excited to take part in it.
It's a lot of fun. Their booth at Dragon Con is fabulous. I mean, it's a fabulously big booth. But y'all had a pretty good setup at FanX too. So,
we get good spaces now because, like I said, they've been expanded. And we were set up at in Tampa. We had our booth, and that's when I had Jody. We got her Jody there, and we had Brandon was in a booth right across from us, Brandon Sanderson. And then we had I just went blank on his name. The author of Silo.
Hugh Howey.
Hugh Howey. Yeah. So he came there for the first time. He's coming to Salt Lake City FanX. He just confirmed 2 nights ago, and so he'll be there as well. He's looking forward to that. But
awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Just people come there and just.
Oh yeah.
We just meet a lot of people and we sell just a bucket load of books, which is great. And we set it up though for the winners, any books that you have, you can come and we give you a space and you keep all the money. You take care of your invoicing and your taxes, but we just give you the space and you're able to sell away, which the judges definitely like because they got lots of books. And it's definitely a good thing. It's a real strong, healthy community with writers and illustrators of the future.
Yeah. It's, The whole sense of community is something definitely felt over the workshop and the gala and just from all the judges and past winners. Sense of community support. That's one of the great things about being a winner in this contest, and not just the Golden Pen winner, but just a winner, is that you have this automatic support group, people who have found success, giving you tips on how to do it. It's incredible.
Yeah, you're going to be in touch with these people. Dean Wesley Smith, you saw those people that came there, they're still in touch with each other 40 years later, so you're going to have your immediate group is also going to be very much connected with you, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, you'll still be, in touch with them.
Yep.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So if you attend the Dragon Con, FanX, or Tampa, and you buy a book from Sarah and you have her signed retail seat so I can see it, I will give you another book for free, not the same book, just another book. And I will tell you, it will be one of the writers of the future, because I got another case I didn't know I had of I think it's, these are like 29 to 31. But anyway, I will send you one of those on us. But you got to get it signed, because if you don't sign, I'd be like, anybody can tell me they bought a book from Sarah. I trust me, I know Sarah. So just go up and say, hey, Joe said, can I buy a book from him? He wants you to sign the receipt so that he knows I can get a free book. That's all y'all can do, ladies and gentlemen. Any one of those three conferences, I'll send y'all an extra book.
Yes, that's pretty nice of you.
Well, I have lots of stuff around. Most of what I've got from Jonathan is almost gone now, but we do have a couple of things that every now and then I find stashed. My wife likes to bury stuff sometimes. Every now and then I'll find something I didn't know I had.
He has no choice, because you get so much stuff coming in there constantly.
Yes,
so.
We do have a lot coming in. To whoever sent me that, no, I don't have any more of these. And as far as I know, 40 is going to be on audio this year. So
it is. It's released now. Have you listened to yours, Jack?
I have. It was incredible. So for those of everyone who hasn't read my story, Sun Spirit Snake, and there's a lot of French in it, because I lived in French-speaking Africa. I speak French. I threw it in there because I thought it was fun. When they told me there was going to be an audiobook of it, I felt so bad, because it would be complicated to do all this French. So I actually had to make an Excel sheet listing out all the words, how to pronounce them, where they're found in the story. I sent it to the audiobook narrators. And I think Tamara
Messerman, she did it. Yeah.
She nailed it. Her pronunciation is amazing. The voices are stellar. It's just an absolutely great interpretation of the story, or performance of the story.
That's why I like that, because, you know, we speak a lot of French down here in Kunas land.
Yeah, you do.
Yes, they speak two Frenches down here. They speak what we call Acadian French, which is basically Kunas French. We share it with the Canadians, and they speak proper French. So when I learned French in school, I remember going out to my granddad's and I was speaking French, and they all looked at me like I was stupid. So they started speaking French. I'm like, what the hell language are y'all? That is not French. I'm like, what the hell are y'all speaking? But that's what it was. It's Acadian French, or better known down here as Couillon French, but still. It's, and the words are different here and there, but that might have been what it is, because every day I catch it, because everything in New Orleans is pretty much French pronounced. All of our cities, like La Place, that's why we call it La Place. Everybody comes in here, they want to call it La Place. No, it's La Place, Baton Rouge, which is almost all the immediate cities around the city itself were pronounced in French. So it's kind of part of a heritage down here, but it's not like it. It's like living in up there in Acadia, Canada. So you must have had a lot of fun doing it like that. I mean, just tossing them words in there like that.
Yeah, no, it was really fun. In my story, you know, there's spirits that walk around that interact with people. And so I made the spirits speak mostly French to make them seem a little bit more bizarre, a little bit more removed from the humans. But it was fun to hear Tamara, you know, do the voices so well and pronounce the French so well.
I love listening to them. Jackie, the books are available now. You can go to galaxypress.com and get them, or Amazon, or anywhere, actually.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble has books, a million. Yeah, all the stores up in Canada. Yeah, there's a lot of books out there right now.
Raymond, I know where you live. I know you're in London, but you can still get the book. You can order from the U.S.
You can also get it on Amazon, and then it'll release, I think, next month in the bookstores in Canada.
I'm sending
promotions right now, but you can get it from Amazon right now.
So get out there and get them. No, what do you mean, Japan? No, you'll have to buy a book from America and send it to Japan.
I think we've got, I think you can get Amazon.jp of what it is, and then UK is Amazon.uk.
Yeah, I would just check. I said, this, you can probably get it. No, you mean if we send it? No, if we send it, it's outrageously expensive. So if I mail a book to Canada, a single book to Canada is going to run me anywhere from 60 to 80 bucks to mail it. Just an ordinary everyday book, nothing big, nothing special. Just last year, I sent up to one of the winners, got three books and a lightsaber, and the three books cost me $114 to send them. Yes, just to give you an idea. So, oh no, we'll send them if you win. If you're a listener to this audience and you're out of the country, we will still send them to you. I may bitch and moan and gripe about paying for it, but we'll still send it. Oh no, we send a lot of stuff overseas. We a lot of our audience is overseas, and we send a lot of stuff overseas. And well, you know what? Maybe some of the winners from Writers of the Future can get a lightsaber. I wonder if you'd consider that friends or something. We'll have to ask him. No, we gave away last year. I thought this year he wasn't going to give away, but he went ahead and gave away a bunch this year. I know I had originally met him at FanX. I don't know if he's coming back in the U.S. this year. And I said, he said something about bringing stuff across, something about bringing the stuff back and forth across. It was exceedingly hard last year. He said for some reason it was just more complicated than it used to be. I was like, well, I said, I hate to not see you come. I said, because he said, oh, but he said, we can still give stuff away. He said, we can still mail it. He's got some deal, some rate deal he can mail around the world, which is kind of cool for him. And what you got for Jack? What's his favorite genre? What is your favorite genre?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, when I'm writing, I tend to slip into fantasy and horror, so kind of dark fantasy. When I'm just reading for fun, when I kind of need a break from reality, I tend to read thrillers. Lee Child's Jack Reacher series, Jack Reacher thriller series is a particular favorite. But, you know, I bounce around. Octavia Butler, she's great. I feel like she's a good nexus between thriller and science fiction, especially Parable of the Sower. I'll read whatever you throw in front of me.
Well, there you go, guys. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny because I've talked to a lot of these winners, and a lot of the winners, a good majority of them like fantasy in different ranges of fantasy, mind you, but still, I find a lot of them like fantasy much more. To be honest with you, when I got involved with these guys, I really thought there was going to be way more sci-fi than there actually is. It was strange to me to meet these writers and listen to them talk and realize that they're not really writing so much sci-fi as they are in actually other genres they were writing in. A lot of it was fantasy, but when I say fantasy, I guess I'm using it in a bad way because it was like from one realm to the other realm. So you got like light, easy fantasy to dark. As long as they're inside the writers of the future's rules, but I found when I was talking to them, it was a wide range of different types of fantasy, which actually was fun for me because I like anything that makes me think or makes me laugh. And somebody said, well, horror don't make you laugh. I said, that's not true. I said, I've laughed my ass through some good horror books before and even some horror movies. It's just one of them things. So Crystal wants to know when you're planning on releasing something. I guess you can get book 40 right now, Crystal. Yes, you can get it right now. He's got the winning story in book 40 along with who did your artwork? Who was the illustrator?
My artwork was by Pedro N. He's from Portugal.
Yes, one of my favorite people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the first time I tried to talk to him, I scared him, by the way. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Let's just say everyone should listen to Pedro's acceptance speech at the gala. It was very funny. It was great. Pedro is a wonderful human being, very talented artist. He's the one that that did my illustration.
Yes, he's changed. I guess fame is. I guess he wasn't expecting as much fame as he actually ended up with. Because I was talking to him about it, he goes, Joe, he calls me Mr. Joe. I kept telling him, don't call me that. You don't have to call me that. And he's like, no, it was like, yeah, I won, you know, and I'm kind of good. And then it was just nonstop fame. He was like, man, people were talking to me all over the place and asking me to do stuff. And he said, I didn't know how to react at first. I said, take the job, man, take the job.
Yep.
Make yourself famous. But somehow his English vastly improved. I don't know how that happened, but it did vastly improve. And he was a lot of fun to talk to. He really was. And, mm-hmm. and he really seemed, in the beginning, he seemed to be very nervous, but then he seemed to really relax and just go right into it, which was nice to see. Because I know everybody's going to be a little bit nervous because you're there. You don't know who the hell any of these people are. You're meeting the judges, you've heard them, but you don't know how they're going to react. You got people like me just wandering around, and Malieve and Jason, you still don't know who any of these people are. They're just taking pictures of you, sticking mics in your faces and stuff. But all y'all did it really good. I was impressed. I was really happy. And I like when we get good interviews and good people. It makes my life, makes John's life easier too. Because, you know, we can ask a question and just let y'all go. It's fun. So you're at the hotel, you run around like a crazy person. So you're getting up to, so let's backtrack a few. So we know everybody knows about the 24-hour story. I always got to talk about this. So because so many of y'all turn these into books, Any plans for this? I thought John was beginning, but I'm going to ask you again. Any plans to turn your 24-hour story into like a short story or a mini novel or something?
Yeah, a short story. So I was, for those who aren't aware, during the workshop, the instructors, in this case, Jody Lanai and Robert J. Sawyer, they gave us a prompt object. Mine was like a shoe insert. And then they gave us 24 hours to write a story. And when the 24 hours are up, they pick two to be workshopped by themselves and the other winners. Their criteria is just throwing the manuscripts off the stairs, whichever one floats the farthest. I wrote my story thinking that statistics were on my side. I wouldn't be picked because I was one of 12. I was very wrong. Mine was picked and workshopped. I was a little embarrassed because it was definitely rough. But when I wrote it, I wrote it thinking no one would ever read it. So I went a little dark. I went a little violent. Little embarrassed for people to read some of that. But ended up, I actually got some pretty good compliments. I was really shocked to say that Robert J. Sawyer, he even suggested I polish it up and submit it to places like Analog and Asimov's, which I've never submitted to because I didn't think any of my work was good enough for there. But, you know, I now have that as a goal. I'm going to polish it up, going to send it in. Not saying that it'll probably be published by them. That's still kind of a long shot, but definitely gave me some confidence.
One of the masters told you to put it in there. You should definitely put it in.
Definitely going to try. You know, I think the contest or that particular exercise has a really good track record of those stories going on to be not just published, but professionally published.
Yeah.
True. There's something about just letting yourself write, not really having, not getting in your own way psychologically of just putting something on paper and then taking the time later to polish it up, you know, get feedback and everything. So I'm doing, I was lucky I already got feedback on my story, but we other winners were already sharing our stories, you know, on email, we're reading each other's stories, we're working on critiquing them so that we can get everyone's up to the place where they're ready to send it out into the publishing universe.
So, did you just write yours or were you one of them ones at 8 o'clock in the morning still writing on it or waking up in the middle of the night? I always ask because I'm getting some really crazy answers from this sometimes.
Yeah, mine had a few false starts. I think around, you know, I think the clock started at like 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote like three openings to it and ended up trashing all of them. Started writing at like 6 p.m. I think I stopped at like 2 in the morning, spent the morning polishing up a little bit, but it was rough, but it had a beginning, a middle, and an end by the time I submitted it at 2 p.m. the next day. So wasn't too crazy.
It was supposed to be. And I was like, I always love when they go out and throw them down the stairs. That shit just cracks me. I got videos of it though, but it always cracks me up. But it always cracks me up when I ask people how the different, you know, differently people write. I know a couple of them told me they were writing all night and then tore it up, and then I forgot who it was who got picked actually. Stopped, got up at 4 a.m, just wrote the damn thing and was happy with it. But that year they were getting up at 8 a.m, so it's kind of like, yep. It's always fun. It's always fun to listen. So, well, you got a good base. You got a good solid base. You sound like you're gonna be comfortable in writing. You know, you can pick from different genres and write. But I mean, you got your favorites to write in. But you can always, nothing keeps you from writing other things. So, and we need something serious out there, man. There is no good fantasy, sci-fi, or otherwise on television right now. I'm kind of getting a little depressed, man. I want some good mood. You know what? I want a movie that I haven't seen remade 85 times by 80 different directors and makes no sense anymore to what it was. Yeah. So I hope you're one of those people that get out there, because I really am just looking for something good. And I'll be glad when I get the audio version of 40. It's like in my wish list or something. I'm hitting it, John. He's just ignoring me.
No, dude. The audiobook's great. Well, I'll make a plug for one of our judges. One of my favorite sci-fi series that has come out, you know, within the last years, the Silo series on the Apple TV Plus. You know, Hugh Howey, one of our judges, wrote it. It's really good. It's a sci-fi, like, murder mystery dystopia. He did a great job. I really like the television show. I think it's either Apple TV Plus or Netflix. I can't remember. They just dropped another sci-fi one, Dark Matter. The novel's by Blake Crouch. I haven't seen the TV show, so I can't speak to it, but the novel is really good. You know, it's a multiverse drama. But
somebody just told me they enjoy that recently.
Yeah, I haven't seen the show. The novel is really good. It's a great sci-fi, hard sci-fi, but there's also a lot of psychological drama in it, family drama. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm always looking for something to watch like 3 o'clock in the morning, so that's really about the only time I get to watch television about 3 in the morning. So that's you know, like last night, I think I forgot what I was watching last night, but it was about 3. You know, I went to bed around 6. It's just easier for me. I got too much other stuff going on to rest. That's why I don't know how you writers get stuff done with the turmoil of the planet. You know, what's going on our planet right now. I don't know how writers actually, because when I'm with them, I can actually write. When I'm home, there's just too much moving around, too much stuff going on. It's too distracting, especially when I have hosts calling me or managers calling me or people from the construction or other people bugging me about other stuff. It just makes it hard to concentrate on anything. I don't know how y'all do. I don't know how y'all lock that out, I guess. And I've asked a lot of authors, how do they lock it out? And everybody's got a different way of doing it, I guess. But you seem like you just kind of incorporated into what you're doing. So that's got to be easier.
Yeah, it's definitely, you always have to fight for the time to actually sit down and put words on the page. But, you know, everyone's different. I've got a toddler, so that's a challenge.
That's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, but she's so cute.
She is very cute.
She's such a doll.
Yes, until he gets all the daddy's papers.
We were talking about it this morning. Emily and Gunhild and I, we were coming in this morning into the office, and we were just talking about her, like, she is such a sweetheart, and your wife is so beautiful. It's like, oh, my gosh. They were just, like, going gushing and gushing about her.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my wife is beautiful, and my daughter is adorable. They both accompanied me to the workshop to visit L.A., do some sightseeing, so it was fun to...
that's fun that you had to bring it with you. That's nice.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm.
I would see, well, mine was 2 or 3. I wouldn't have trusted him around any paper. They would have been in the air. Dad, watch this.
They had a good role model to learn how to do that.
I was an angel. What are you talking about? I was like angelic when I was young. I don't know what y'all talking about.
Yeah.
It was just a demon terror is what he was. Yeah. Still is. Actually, at 38, he's still a terror. He aggravates so. See, he likes to write. He won't ever submit anything. And I bitch at him about this all the time, but he likes to write. He has been since he was like 10. He'd just go off. Matter of fact.
And again, he's a chip off the old block.
So it just tells you something. I made him mad one day. I made him come down to Florida with me. He ripped the panel off the inside of my car and wrote a whole complete story on the panel inside of my car. I almost killed him, mind you, because, you know, it probably cost me like $500 to have it fixed. But it's actually a good story. I was like, why don't you write some? Why don't you just submit stuff? Submit it anywhere. You know, I get him all the time. He gives me stories to read. I'm like, submit them. He said, what do you think? I said, I don't know. I submit them. He said, well, you talk to the judge. I said, no, judges don't care what the hell I say. Just submit. I said, go to Writers of the Future, which I know he has now. I said, just read through it. Because I caught him on my computer reading through it. I said, see what they want. Write it. I said, I'm telling you, the worst thing that will happen is they'll say, submit again. He said, really? I said, they're not going to tell you anything else but submit again. I said, unless the story's got something to it. I said, then they might tell you something else. I said, but that's the worst. And I tell this to people when I'm doing lectures. Because people tell me, they'll come up to me. Because now a lot of them just tie me in with them. It doesn't matter what lectures. I could be off doing a political lecture. I could be talking about animals. It doesn't really matter. At the end, sometime along the end, I'm going to get asked about Writers of the Future. And I always tell them the same thing. I said, writersoffuture.com. Go read it, submit. It doesn't matter what, if it's illustrator, author, it doesn't matter. Like at LSU, I was speaking to a whole class full of authors, and it was on politics, no less. But right about two-thirds of the way through it, somebody said, don't you work with Writers of the Future? I said, I do press for them. Yeah, why? And he's like, can you tell us something about it? I'm like, yeah. So let me finish this, and I'll tell you about them. And then they'll go on and have 5 million questions. I'm like, writersoffuture.com. I said, just go over there, read it. I said, there's nothing I can tell you that's not on that website. And I said, besides that, if you're going to really be serious about submitting, you need to go there and read the rules. I said, I can tell you can't have more than 17,000 words, but there's other rules besides that you have to read. And they're like, okay. And most of them are interested, and they want to go. they want to go, but a lot of people are just scared though. They're like, I think they think a dragon's waiting for them on the other end. I don't know what the hell it is, man. I had a professor tell me, he said, well, do they keep the story? I said, no, actually they don't. He's like, what do you mean? I said, they don't. I said, if you win, it's still your story. Nobody does that. I said, I said the same thing, but you know what? I was wrong. They actually give you a story. He's like, no, I'm telling you. I said, this year made 5 workshops with them. I said, I'm telling you again, you keep your story. I said, not only that, they actually help you sell the damn thing. And he's like, no. I'm like, yeah. I said, you know what? I'm going to do a show on just how they sell stuff. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, they will help you. I said, if you win, you can go sign books with them. You have 10 places. I said, they want to see you make it. I said, if you're making it and you're out there talking about Writers of the Future, more people are going to submit. I said, that's the goal. And I said, we want everybody submitting all around the damn planet. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, just submit. Oh, well, I'm too old. I said, no, you're not. I said, the oldest winner I met was 70. I said, so obviously you're not too old. And, well, here, I'm too young. I'm like, no. I said, I think the youngest one I met was 16. I said, so I'm thinking y'all are well within the group.
I have a question for you, Jack. So you use 2 different names to write one. So what's the basic philosophy of that? Because I've talked to other authors who use pen names. So is this because you split nonfiction and fiction, or how? What's your basic premise?
The basic premise, I guess the easy answer is to say, yeah, just a split between my fiction self and my nonfiction, you know, professional life. The slightly more true answer is my real name is often misspelled. My real name is Garrett. Most people spell it with 2 T's. I have 1. I have college diplomas that were misspelled. So I just figured, you know what, if someone's going to Google me, I'm going to make it easier. I'm going to go with Jack, just something simple and punchy. And I never really thought I would be quite this successful so quickly. So, you know, Jack is stuck. That's what I'm going with.
It works.
Yeah. And then are you going to go into social media? Because I was trying to, when I posted the podcast that just went up this week, I was trying to find, how can people search you or find you? And I couldn't.
You're struggling to find me? Well, I'll have to fix that.
Because I saw a Facebook page for Garrett Nash that was last posted in 1946. So
okay, you don't look quite that old now, man.
Yep. No. Yeah. Everyone should find me. I'm on Twitter now, X, at J Nash Stories. Same for Threads, J Nash Stories. But best way to find me is just my website. That's yes. JackNashStories.com.
Yeah, when I typed in Jack Nash author, it came right up. JackNashStories.com is the first thing.
Jack Nash Stories,
and then it's got Amazon got you listed. Thrift Books got you listed too. I don't know what's what. You're listed here with science fiction, and then here they relist your website again. JackNashStories.com, and it's got I guess you must have a bio on it because it says about Jack Nash. And yeah. There's some other group I've never heard of, Galaxy Press. I don't know who the hell that is. And before anybody writes to me, Galaxy Press is sitting right here, so I don't want any smart-ass comments. And then here you are, Jack Nash, and they've got you listed. Oh, no, this isn't you. Sorry, 1929. Sorry, that's not you.
Yeah, someone else. I'm out there. I need to get better with the social media game. I've never been one for it, so there's not a lot of me on the social media yet. I'm getting better. I'm posting more. But
well, just set you up a business page, something that relates to your books. Don't do personal, because one, personal enrich you to 5,000 people, and two, you're not protected, but you are protected under the business side. So and you have unlimited, you can get as many people on it as you want. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You name it whatever you want, you know. You name it just what you got everything else named, so it's the same thing, and just run it. I have 44 social media pages. And trust me, you ask my station manager if she don't hear me curse sometimes. But it is good. I mean, we get a lot of feed through those. We get a lot of people come in, request stuff. We give away a lot of books through them. We get a lot of just people in general that come in looking for, like, authors like yourself. They'll come in on one of the pages, and you'll get like a flash that somebody was looking for such and such author. And if it's somebody we know, we'll just type it in. You can find them here, or here's their website. So, see, now I know what your net website is. Somebody asks, I'll just type it in. As your website, and do it that way. That's how I do it with John. I just type in Galaxy. But shit, his like freaking. I don't even look anymore. That's like, all right, isn't it? If I don't even look at either one when I'm typing them in, and I'm like, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, so I got the podcast up now with jacknashstories.com.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Thank you.
And we'll add it to this one when we're done tonight. So it'll be added into and done.
Perfect.
So you've been to these cons? I mean, so let's get into some crazy stuff. Have you been conning out there in the world? That's a bad way of saying that. I'm sorry.
No, not that kind of con. I'm actually new to the science fiction fantasy, fandoms.
Oh, you're gonna have fun then.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be a fun experience. There are a lot of really passionate fans out there. There's a lot of different stuff, and I'm excited to get into it. Meet the people who, not just the writers of it, but also the people who enjoy the various. Mediums, video games, movies, all of it. Yeah, no, it's been fun. Riders of the Future was my first like dipping the toe into it, and it was really fun. So excited to see the wider world.
And they're very nice about Riders of the Future. The cons are a little crazier. Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, I like all of them that I've been to, but if you're going to Dragon Con, just be in good shape, which you look like you are, but you're going to do a lot of freaking walking.
Yeah, wherever you come, let us know. So, because we want to book you on the Rise of the Future panel as a grand prize winner, so we want to make sure that we get you scheduled for that too.
Yeah. So,
okay. I'll let you know.
Yeah. So yeah, because and that's freebie press right there that you'd have to pay big money for anywhere else to get your hands on. So, plus they get a lot of people come by their booth. I was sitting there just filming with him one afternoon, hanging out with him and Emily. Before anybody asked, I'm talking about Emily Goodwin. And we were just hanging out, and the camera was rolling nonstop. John and I were talking. Well, we did a couple of interviews, and Emily and I did a couple of interviews. But then the camera was just rolling because they were busy, and they stay busy the whole time. And
we saw a lot of books. We
saw a lot of books. Plus that year, I was harassing. There was three illustrators sitting next to me, so I was harassing them. And then they finally left, and a couple of authors came in. But those seats pretty much stayed full.
Yeah.
The whole time I was there, I really didn't say maybe one time they might have been empty for a little while, but for the most part, they were staying full. And I was trying to hide one of those big pictures in one of his back, but Sarah wasn't going for it, damn it. But they really do sell a lot of books, and they draw a lot of attention to the place. So if you're sitting there signing books, more than likely you're going to get some kind of attention from them. People just want to stop and say, hi, what are you doing? Who are you? What are you here for? What made you come here? Things like that. And you're right there giving away stuff or giving away little pamphlets or this is my book, or I'm in this book here. Why don't you get it or sign it? And I was just a surprise. They hustled the whole time they're there. I was just sitting back drinking Cokes and stuff, eating chips and shit. I was just watching. I mean, I was filming, but I was watching. I was being lazy. But they also, it's just a lot of fun to watch them. It's high energy. It's fun to watch everybody. Plus, I do know that other authors and illustrators will be there in other capacities, in different parts of the Dragon Con and stuff like that. So you also get to go visit and hang out with them and see them while you're around. So mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how many of them will ask you, hey, why don't you sit down and chat for a while? You're sitting there. I was harassing Jody the other day. She's about it, and she's they'll stop. You can sit down. You'll be talking with them. People coming up to talk to them. She's introducing you or him or whoever. It's a lot of freebie press is the best way to put it.
Yeah. I have a question for Jack, another one here, because when we did the podcast, it was funny listening to you because my voice is like I was so tired. It was the morning after the gala, and I was just like, my voice is like one or two notes lower than what it is right now. But asking a few weeks now after the fact, what stands out for you after that whole week of like just nonstop things? Anything stands out more than others from that of memory for you?
Oh, that's tough. All of it is still so vivid. There was the emotional highlights, hearing my name was accepted as one of the winners, as the grand prize winner was, something I'll never forget. But then there was a lot of just the things that I learned that I'm still, processing as a writer. And I think one of the things that really was a standout for me was getting the critiques for my 24-hour story. As a new writer, especially, it's really hard to find people who are willing to take some time to give you, you know, their opinion of what you're writing. And it's even harder to get someone who really knows what they're doing, like the judges. But then to get like 14, 15 people to give me critiques of my story, and then realizing that it wasn't just, you know, a pile of garbage. There were actually some good nuggets in there that I could try to take out. That was, I think that was a big confidence boost for me, even more than the winning the grand prize. Just hearing people say, yeah, there was some things here that resonated with me. This is something that you should, you know, continue pursuing. So no matter where that goes, you know, if hopefully that story gets published somewhere, but even if not, that was a really good experience for me. It gave me a lot of confidence to just keep going, keep trying, and keep working and just write what I love to write.
I know they liked the story, because later on in the day I caught him and I asked him about it. I think we were going to dinner. And I sat out, I was asking him about the two stories they went. I always do. I harass him every year about it. And they enjoyed the stories. I will tell you one thing about the judges. They're not going to bullshit you. If they don't like something, they're going to tell you they don't like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if they think something is not quite right or should be changed, they have no problem. It's one of the things I like about them. Actually, they have no problem saying, hey, I mean, that's what you're there for, is to learn how to do it correctly. And they're willing to do it. And they liked your story, because we were talking at dinner about it. And I was like, well, and he said, well, and then the conversation that came up is, do you think he's going to turn it into a short story or into a story? And both the judges and the people who were having dinner with all kind of agreed that you should try. So that was nice to see, you know. And we talked about that. I asked him about all of y'all. So they got favorites and stuff like that. I harass him about everything. John lets me harass him. But I got to give you credit. I mean, I got to give you and all the winners credit for just going through everything y'all went through and how well everybody came out of it, and how everybody looked good at the gala. I mean, y'all all looked smashing, man. I was like, damn, it's a good looking crowd, man. Look at this. It's always good to see a good looking crowd. And it's good to see, you know, y'all all handled this with, I don't want to say with ease, but with comfort might be a better word to use.
Yeah, but right now with the way the new world is, what you've done on that stage, what was recorded there, that's your history now. That's going to be there forever. And so that's how people will get to know you. You know, if they're going to say, okay, so whether it's Garrett or Jack, you know, they're going to look at it and go, okay, so what kind of a guy is he? And so you get that and you see that and you're like, wow, it makes a difference. You know, it's just house, you know, with a planet of 7 billion and climbing, you know, what do you have to be able to suss out somebody? What kind of a person is it? So you can go back and look at your social media, look to see what's online with them. You check them out and you see, okay, what are they like? How do they look? How do they dress? What's their appearance? What's their composer? It makes a world of difference.
It does. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if John's told you not, but so we re-aired the gala a few times. So the first time, I think it was in the 1.3, 1.5 range, and then it re-aired again around the same thing. And then, for some reason, I got this crazy idea to air it in China, just in the China service. I was stunned. 2.2 million people listened. Wow. I called John. I told John, I said, I got a surprise for you, because I wasn't planning on doing it. Wasn't something I was planning on doing. I just got into something, and I said, you know what? While I'm doing this, let me go ahead and run this. And I was really surprised. And so it just tells you that there's not – well, you know, I like to remind people there's not just this market. It's not just a U.S. market. Right as a future, I mean, what do you have, 8, 9 people from different countries this year?
Yeah, right. Winners, and there's 2 people from China.
Yeah, so, I mean, so it opens up a whole new venue when you stop and think, oh, well, shit. Not only did I win, but this is a worldwide event, people from around the world, so... And we know out of the 1.3 to 1.5, both times, probably only a third of them were U.S. The rest of them were probably from around the planet. So no telling who was watching you. And we do have audiences in Africa, by the way.
Yeah, your buds from Africa are watching. Yay! Go get it! Yo!
Yeah, they probably were going by. Wait, whoa, who was that? Go back. I think I know this guy. Oh, shit, I know this guy.
Hopefully some future winners from the continent as well. You know, hopefully.
Yeah, well, you've got a few winners from there, so it's and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I think if they're good and submit, they're going to get in. It goes back to the same thing, though. Everybody who's listening, you have to submit people. I know I said this a million times, but submit. You can't win if you're just looking at it and it's sitting on your table, like mm-hmm. the one sitting next to me over here. Well, it's way too much to submit to write its future, but you have to submit, people. That's how you win.
Yep.
And, right. and the more you submit, the more likely you have a chance of winning. Not everybody wins the first time, you know. Oh, so that's a question for you. I meant to ask you, and I always ask this. So how many times? 1, 5, 20?
This win was my third entry.
Oh, shit, man. I say that out loud. I'm sorry.
No,
that's good. I mean, that's
well, his job in life is he's a writer. He's a professional writer. So
I mean, still, that's good, man. Three is awesome. Good.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I'm humbled that it happened this quick. There was this story was really surprised me that it was the one that won. You know, I wrote it for as a practice exercise when I was first starting out writing, you know, fiction. It became just practice for another workshop. I submitted just because I made the goal to submit every quarter. I thought this one was too long, too weird. I didn't really think anyone would pay attention to it. So it's just, I'm floored that this one went all the way to the grand prize.
Yeah.
You know, so you really never know what you're sitting on. You have to submit. I think we're probably pretty bad judges of our own writing. We either think it's the greatest thing ever written, or we think it's a piece of trash. But you just have to do your best, and some people will like it, some people may not. But you just got to try.
Exactly. And one of the questions now is, this contest was built originally when Algis Budras created the first workshop. He took the essays that were written by L. Ron Hubbard because he was a total fan of L. Ron Hubbard. And so he took the various essays, and what's amazing, even talking with the judges like Tim Powers, Dave Wolverton, definitely really loved them, said these are as valid now as when they're first written. Maybe some of the nomenclature's changed, but the actual concept of, you know, the business of writing, all the different essays. Which of the essays for you rang the most helpful?
I can't remember the exact title, but it's when Hubbard talks about going out and, you know, experiencing the world.
You need to talk.
Yeah, exactly. You need to go out and do research. And it's not just, you know, book research. There's a lot of technical stuff you can get from books, and, you know, important stuff for whatever genre you're writing. But you really need to talk to people. You know, every person you meet is a lifetime of stories. And so it's going about. It's, you know, it's encouraging new writers, especially, to go around and talk to people, listen to their stories, figure out what they've done in their life. You can use all that in your stories, but also it gives you ideas for stories. It gives you context. It gives you flavor. You know, I think Hubbard, you know, he seemed like a very outgoing kind of person, very curious about the world, wanted to know the people around him. And that's how he wrote a lot of his adventure stories, is he went out and tried to actually go to the places he was writing about, talk to the people who had the jobs, you know, of his characters. And that's something really important for writers as well, is to really get that unique flavor that you can't get. I mean, we all have good imaginations. We can come up with a lot of stuff, but it's those little unique details that really set it apart that
exactly.
You just need to go out and experience it.
Yeah. That's when he talks about Jack London.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Where Jack London would go, he'd borrow a dollar and go, apply some sailor just coming in for information, not necessarily was going to write a story about what he did, but just get his juices running to write his adventure stories.
Yep.
That's exactly. a good way to do it, Dan. Live life, write about what you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and to circle back, you know, we mentioned Nnedi Okorafor. You know, she's Nigerian American. The reason part of her stories are so, I think, resonate with so many people is because they are grounded in reality. They're grounded in, you know, The first book of hers I read is Noor. You know, it's about a future Nigeria, but there's a lot of stuff she incorporates that's going on around now. You know, reading, I was like, this is the future, this is fantasy, but this is also Nigeria. You know, I haven't spent a lot of time in Nigeria, just a week or so, but it was enough to be like, I feel like this is something I recognize because I've been there, and I'm sure for the rest of her fans, that's an even more strong reaction. And, you know, it's taking stuff that we actually experience or that we can talk to people about, putting that in fiction just makes it all the better.
Yeah.
It's got to be fun though. I mean, it's got to be still settling in your heart. Like, damn, I won. Yeah, they can't come take it back. I won. Let me go hide just to.
I know. I'm waiting for the first few days. I kind of was on edge, like someone's gonna come around and be like, "Hey, actually, just kidding. We need the trophies and the check back." But no one's come asking yet. So
yes, it would be just, Joni anyway. So don't worry. Yep. That's who it would be. So I know you when you won the first time. So when you got that call from Joni, how did you feel? I mean, were you no way, this is, can't be, this is bullshit, excuse me.
Or did you forget that you entered the contest?
I know.
No, I didn't forget. It was actually like the day before the call, you know, I had zero expectation of winning, but I was like checking the website. I was like, oh, have they announced, you know, who got honorable mention yet? Hoping I at least made honorable mention. Got a call from Joni. You know, I think some people were like, I thought she was a telemarketer at first. But, you know, I put her on speaker because we were eating dinner. And so I had it after the call, I had to explain to my wife what the contest was. Like, yeah, I've been submitting to it. But no, it was really great. I was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, I was a finalist. You know, that's a good shot in the arm. I had zero expectations of actually winning. You know, because I think there's 8 finalists, 3 winners. Even more shocked when she called me back when I was at work and told me that I was the first place winner. I think I started laughing. I was just like, I'm never this lucky. What's happening? But glad my lucky streak wasn't all the way over yet.
So on a completely side note, so how does your wife feel about all of this? Is she behind you or does she want to smack you?
No, I've got an incredibly supportive wife. She is absolutely wonderful. She realizes that this is something important to me. It's something that makes me happy. You know, it's a creative outlet, so she's totally behind me. That's all the great time. She's the one's like, hey, you need to sit down and write today. Make sure you're getting some time to do that, because she knows if I go a day without writing, I start to get a little antsy.
It's like going without your Snickers bar, huh?
Yeah, exactly. She's like, go do some writing. No, she's incredibly supportive, so it's been
really great
to have her at my side for all this.
That makes your life easier. I mean, especially if you got a toddler running around.
Yeah.
One of the winners, I can't remember who it is, had a toddler. He was telling me he started writing. He'd be reading to her to, you know, put her in bed at night, and then he was writing while he was reading. And he said one day he realized he went and read what he wrote. He was writing the story he was reading to her. I was like, he said, I don't think I can see it. It's the writer.
I think that's David Hankins.
Oh, yeah, it was hilariously funny.
Death of the Taxman, I think. Yeah. No, a great way to start a fiction career just with your kids. I mean,
yeah, he's cool. But you know, it's nice to hear what people with children that are doing this. I mean, because anybody who's got kids knows a pain in the ass to raise kids, and it's not cheap these days either. So, you know, usually like when you have free time, like my son was asking me the other day, because he hadn't got any right now, he was asking me, he said, what happens when I get kids? I said, well, you just get a second child. That's what happens. I wish he would submit, because but I always tell him the same thing. Just like every author's told me, all the judges told me, don't ask mom and dad if the book's good. Go ask somebody else. And that's a good thing, because, you know, I read it, I said, well, this is pretty good, but he said, well, you know, you've read all. I said, that don't mean anything, Joe. You need to go have some other. I said, put it on. No, don't put it online. Just get some friends. Because you know what? I'm not real trusting about online anymore. I used to tell people all the time, but I notice other people might snatch up stories now. So I'm not as big a fan as putting things. I said, find one of the writers' groups, submit it to them, let them read it. I said, and see if you're worth it, if you're any good. I tried to send it to the contest. Just, I said, just send it to the contest. And I said, they'll let you know.
Yeah.
I said, the worst that they're going to do is say, hey,
send us another entry.
Yeah, send us another entry. And he said, what does that mean? I said, it means you suck. Send another entry. He's like, Dad. I'm like, well, I'm just telling you, son. You mean, you're not going to ever win if you don't submit.
Exactly.
But hopefully he will. He'll get around to it. He really does. He, for him, writing's like recreational. He enjoys it. It's just like downtime. If he's not gaming or working, he's writing. So I just don't know why he won't submit anything. It's one of them things. It's John's fault. I'm blaming it on John. Sounds good to me. Because I told him, you know, I actually sent him over the course. He was asking me about the course, and I was telling him about we're talking about the writersoffuture.com course, guys and girls. Jack's been over there. John knows what it is. It's Emily didn't put this course together. This is a really good course. I mean, I learned a lot from the course. And y'all have to remember, I knew this much about writing. I mean, literally, it was less than zero is what I knew. At least y'all had a start. I had no clue. And then, of course, listening to the judges talk, I even realized I had even less of a clue than the clue I thought I didn't have to start off with. But between them all, between the judges and the course, I've learned quite a lot. Enough that I can actually sit and write something now. Not I would ever give it to anybody but you, but at least I can sit. I understand, you know, things I didn't understand, like filling stuff and how to make story, how to start a story, how to end story, and what he always likes to tell me, Wolf, kill you darlings. You know, so I learned a lot of this stuff, but the point being, ladies and gentlemen, the reason I'm talking and babbling about this is if you want to write like Jack is and win, take these courses. This will help you to maybe become the winner. I mean, look, this guy won. It's just a helper. It's a helping hand. You got through one of them's passed away, but you got three great people there who are giving out lessons. I said, plus the entire course. I said, it's a good course. Take it. I said, and see if you can write something when you're done with it. I enjoyed it. I really did. And I'm never going to write anything, but you know, cause Emily will smack me if I do. I did tell Emily that if I ever get this thing written that I'm working on, it's going to be like 300,000 words. I'm just going to mail it to her in a vanilla envelope and say, Emily, can you edit this for me? I can only imagine the letter I'll get back after that.
She spent several weeks. She's the one that scripted it. Emily scripted the online writing.
Yeah, I know. And I give her credit for it all the time because it's a great course.
Yeah.
And I tell everybody that. I mean, if you think somewhere in your brain that you could be an author, and you should take this course. I mean, it's a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. You know, plus, you know, getting to hear Orson Scott Card talk anyway is another good stepping stone. What do you mean, Frankie? You mean tonight? You heard us talking about that earlier? No, you're not invited to that. Sorry. You have to be an author. Yes. I think you have to be a writer and a future author too. Sorry. They're asking about the Orson Scott tonight. Well, I'm going, but that's different for me. I'm just going to watch. It's a perverted thing for me. I just like to watch. Yes. I'll have the camera on so I can watch. Orson's great to listen to. He's got a good voice. He answers questions very profoundly, which I like. I like people when I ask them a question, they just answer the question. They don't take 30 minutes to think about before they end. By the way, you're good at answering questions too, Jack. It's a good thing. When you get out in the real world sitting in big press places, it's a good thing where you can just answer the question. That way the host don't get aggravated. He or she won't harass you. They'll just ask you a question. So, I like this guy. I'm having this guy back. And because that's how they think about it. They're really thinking about is how much information am I getting out and how long is it going to take and how well is he going to sign across the entire system? That's you know, because they're thinking ratings. That's all that is. John and them are actually thinking about John's career, which is a whole different thing. But, you know, you need the media to get the word out to everybody. So be nice. Get out there. And remember, and I tell this to hosts every year, I mean to writers every year and authors, once you've got something to your claim, don't be scared to submit to Coast to Coast or to any group of radio or TV show. You can even do your local ones. You'd be surprised how many times I've been on my local radio talking about stuff. These are all things that just help you to sell books. When you got something to sell, it just makes it easier to sell them. And people will buy it. And you know what? People like to support local authors.
Yeah. Really you do. Had how many media, Jack?
Good question. Well, I think this is my second time with Joe. Just did another interview this week with Sherry. And then I think we've done some online.
I think you had some press too, some.
Oh, yeah. Well, my hometown newspaper did a story on me. That was fun. Yeah. I think
nice.
You author service folks, Carmen's following up on a few other stuff. So yeah. I'm sure there's some coming down the pipe.
Yeah, we tried to get at least three for everybody, but you've had it's good working with Joe right now because you're able to get a lot more. And now that I've finally survived his gauntlet, you know, he's very good now with you all to talk about.
I push all y'all. I want to see all y'all succeed.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
somebody asked me the other day about John. I said, oh, I love John to death. So you mean to him? I said, yeah, he knows. And I said, I tell him all the time, I'm sorry, but I said, I had to make sure he was what he said he was. I said, because not everybody is, but he, I mean, I back writers of the future all over the place. Hell, even my manager does. I was stunned when she plugged him for the gala event because she's tough, man. And so we go out of our way. And when I'm lecturing, it doesn't matter. And it's so freaking funny. I could be lecturing about how my dog poops. I'm not kidding you. And somebody's going to ask me about writers of the future. Always. It's gotten to be just a thing now. I was doing an online lecture just the other day for KTX. I think it was out in New York. And we're talking. And we're about two-thirds through the interview. Call comes in. We're talking. The girl comes on. She said, can I ask you about writers of the future? And I started laughing. And the hostess, I said, why are you laughing? I said, don't worry about it. She said, well, what? And then the host starts, well, what the hell's writers? I said, let me answer the lady's question. And then we spent the next 25 minutes of the interview talking about writers of the future. And the host knew nothing about it. And he said, well, I write. I said, well, you need to be sending it in here then. He's like, really? He said, can you get me some favors? I said, don't work that way. I said, they really are blind judges. I said, trust me, I've been all up inside, all over the place trying to find out they work. He's like, and then she's like, well, I went and took their course and the course is great. And she said, what do I do next? I said, you write a story and send it to them. She's like, what? I said, yeah. I said, don't, at the end of that course, there's a place where you write a story. I said, you should have already written that. And I said, you write a story and then send it to them. And I said, you can submit for, and then some other lady calls and she said, you can submit 4 times a year. I'm like, yes. She said, can you submit the same story? I said, well, not if it's exactly the same as you sent it the first time, you can't. But it is interesting. And then every now and then somebody will ask about a particular winner. I don't know why or how come, or, you know, usually like people like you are going to get asked about because you were the big winner, but still every now and then somebody will hear a story or maybe have read a story in one of the books they've already got and they'll ask about a particular winner. I still get asked about David all the time I'm sorry.
Justin Taxman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get all the time. And I start laughing every time. It's like, wow. I said, because the story is funny. I said, it's not all funny, but it's funny. I said, you should go read it. And then I've got a couple of his books laying around. I found two more. I thought I gave them all away, but I found two more. Well, one more because one's autographed. But so it'll get given away too. And then we do every holiday, we will be giving away. So what I do a lot of times, if I start giving books away through December, a lot of times I'll have Carmen book different winners to come on just to talk about this story to get people. So we'll do like, since it's 12 or 14 stories, depending on what's in the book, we'll bring in 3 or 4 and just let them talk about their stories in depth because that just opens up the other 8 stories. Normally I wouldn't do that because I don't want y'all giving away the story, but when we're going to do 12 stories or 14 stories, it's okay if 3 or 4 people come in. It's like, well, it's like bait for the fish is what it really is. You know, so we just let them come in and talk about it. And you'd be surprised how many people call in, how many people, I want that book, I want that book, I want that book. And hell, even sometimes if we're out, they'll go buy the damn thing. So, and that's what we really want. That's what we're after. Johnny Redfish, and where'd that name come from? Galaxypress.com, yes. You can, any of the things we're talking about, you can buy there. Oh, no, I don't have it in here. But anyway, they got a pad about this big. I mean, a thumb drive about this big that you can get everything they have of L. Ron Hubbard's over there and just plug it into your pad and go to town. Well, I had a good pad and somebody stole it. Now I got another pad, which we're not going to get into that because it just pisses me off. But anyway, you can get everything you need because I know a lot of y'all, there's a lot of audio books there. What is it, about half John of L. Ron stories on audiobooks?
Closer to 2/3, 3/4.
Yeah, so there's a lot because I was listening to a lot of them. Well, a lot of them are just fun. And then they've got the retro covers, like I would say like 1920 retros covers. And that's when they weren't written, but that's I just like those old covers for some reason. I noticed Echo likes to do artwork like that too. She likes that retro, that kind of 1920s retro stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Echo Chernik. She's in between John and I now, and she's one of the coordinating judges over at Writers of the Future for the Illustrators. Yes, And she said something about painting Jack's Indian face. I don't know what that meant, but Jack, I can only imagine what she was talking about there. So, I mean, oh, before we got in, we're getting close to the end, but so how did you like the piece of artwork that they had done, the cover that they had done for you?
It was amazing. Pedro did a really great job capturing. It's not a scene from my story, but it's kind of an overall capturing some of the main elements. But he did my favorite part is just the color palette. There's a few colors that are mentioned several times in the story, just a certain feel that I was trying to bring in. He brought all of that to life. It was just great. It really is something really unique to see, you know, a story that I created with my imagination put into words, and then he takes those words and puts them through his imagination, comes up with a picture, and to really see how that has gone through someone else's imagination, the two working together. It's just so fun.
That's one of my favorite things when I go is the reveal for the artist. It's always fabulous. Some years it's more crying than other years, but still, it's always great to see people's face because you see everybody walking around like, is that mine? Is that mine? And for somehow or another, I don't know how y'all do it, but so far, the 5 years I've seen and five groups I've seen, they always seem to know which one is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
It's always amazing to see because really, you don't know. I mean, you see them walk up and look, and then they just stop. And then you're like, no, maybe they got the wrong one. I'm just waiting for somebody to get the wrong one up. It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah. It's a really fun experience. I think really unique as well.
So hopefully in the future hopefully you'll get to see it like Dragon Con or FanX or somewhere along those lines. Well, where are you at now? You West Coast, East Coast, Central?
I'm East Coast. I'm in Virginia.
Oh, you're in Virginia. Okay. Well, you're way out there then. So yeah. I got a lot of friends in Virginia and West Virginia too, for that matter. Y'all done with the cherry blossoms, huh? Or close, somewhere up in there? I know there's a couple of times I used to go lecture in D.C. a lot. And, we'd drive because, why y'all drive? It's only like 12 hours from where I live. But I used to just like to drive through the mountains, the beautiful mountains up there. And of course, if everything's blossoming, it's just a stunning, fun drive. And people, I fly all over, but still, every now and then I drive. I can't. When I went to see John at Utah year before last, I actually drove. Everybody's like 7 days. It's like I had a great time. I got to see Devil's Mountain, all kind of shit. They brought my dogs.
Love road tripping out in the Southwest.
We got a great country to drive across. Mm-hmm. And see, for people like you with imaginations, driving across America has got to be fun because there's all kind of stuff. And I'm not talking about crazy people who ever wrote that. I'm just talking about stuff. I mean, I remember stopping at the Great Divide and having lunch and just sitting there thinking, looking down the divide, thinking about this massive whatever this was that caused this. And it's just stuff like that. And then you'll see buses come rolling out the middle of the desert. We're talking, like buses, tour buses. And there's nothing but desert, but here comes three tour buses. You're like, and where were these guys coming from? And what do I don't know about? Makes you wonder. And then you'll see like one of those plants that are taking their energy from the core, not from the core, but from heat. And it's kind of, it's just sitting out there in the middle of nowhere in the desert by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It just things that, if you got a good imagination, you can go all kind of ways with stuff like that. But I can't. I know we got to get out of here. Any part words before we roll? Anything you want to tell anybody?
I just say to any aspiring writers, submit to the contest. There's nothing to lose, everything to gain. And if you'd like to check out my story, Sun Spirit Snake, you can find me on my website. It's jacknashstories.com. Thanks to you, Joe, for having me. Thanks to John. It's great to see you again.
You're a great guest. You're a lot of fun to talk to. Johnny, anything you want to tell these crazy people before we roll?
Yeah, get your copy of Rising Feature Volume 40. It's available in bookstores all across the United States and Canada. And it's available internationally via Amazon. And you can go to galaxypress.com and it's at the front page there. You click on it, it'll take you all. There's a link for all the different bookstores that have it.
Well, guys and girls, we got to get out of here. Don't forget, you got Writers of the Future on Saturdays now. You have Echo Chernik in between us. You have the Author's Quill. We do have two other shows coming to join us on Saturday pretty soon. Brenda, most of them are going to be either illustrators or authors, yes. It's pretty much what Saturday is going to be. Well, we want a place for authors. We want to build up enough audience here that if an author comes out with a new story, they have a place they could probably go maybe make some fast money. Whether it works or not, we won't know probably for another year, but it does look good. I can tell you all that much. If you want to submit books, if you want to submit stories to Galaxy Press, I mean, just go over there to writersofthefuture.com and submit it. If you want to buy something, it's galaxypress.com. Anything you want to add to this one, you can send to what's the new website now? The new email is uprradio@gmail.com. Or if you got a moan, groan, bitch, or complaint, you address that courtesy of Michelle DeRoche. Don't bother sending it to me because I'm not going to read it. Send it to Michelle DeRoche. And if it's important enough, she'll pick up the phone and say, Joe, what the bleep was this? So on that note, good night, everybody, and have a good weekend.